There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this week's edition of Bench with Bubba, let me talk to you about Draft. Draft.com is one of the coolest new ways to play fantasy sports. You get to draft against, you know, 3, 5, 10-man competitions. There's new drafts starting every 5 minutes. Your chances of winning on Draft are over 80% better than salary cap sites. That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. You can play in real-life NBA, NFL. They have NHL. PGA is a great one. They have MLB. They have them all, and it keeps getting better, better, and better. Drafts usually finish in under 5 minutes. You get paid the next day the event finishes, but they're filling fast. Every second, drafts are filling. They have them up until your games begin. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, and you have to use the promo code SD Sports. All one word, SD Sports. That's right. Play in a real money draft for free by using the promo code SD Sports. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code SD Sports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now to this week's edition of Benched with Bubba. Back to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 75, talking some fantasy baseball from a special guest that you may have heard on this podcast before. You can find him on Twitter at Lance Brosdow. He does tons of work at Big Three Sports, Razzball, including the Dynasty podcast with Prospect Jesus. He does a bunch of work for CBS Scouting Net and much, much more. Lance Brosdowski, how are we doing?
Doing well, man. Yeah, I remember that first podcast we were on, that was all like media baseball general talks. And I remember our outline at the end was like, we were going to jump into fantasy. And then we looked up and saw we were like an hour and 15 minutes in, and we decided to go to bed, I think. So this is the extension of that podcast, I guess. So I'm excited to talk some fantasy here.
Yeah, I'm pumped for it. Definitely one of the bright minds in the industry. So we're going to do this many more times, I have a feeling, but I wanted to get this started. Getting ready as everyone's, you know, it's almost March, so it's draft season. We'll start off with some players you've been writing about the last few months in your different ventures. They could be polarizing in the good or the bad ways. Some people love them, some people hate them. So let's kick off with the starting pitcher for the Cleveland Indians, Trevor Bauer. You know, they're keeping drones away from him, hopefully. So what do you have in store for, or what are your thoughts on Trevor Bauer this year?
Yeah, so I do a column that comes out every Monday on Razzball.com, and this was, I believe, mine from about a week ago. I just kind of dug into Bauer over. I like looking at – I have my NFBC ADP pulled up here, so I'm going to be referencing that if I reference ADP at all on this. Bauer's sitting 142nd overall in leagues. But what I like doing is looking at the guys at Razzball between Rudy, who does Steamer-adjusted, which is the Fangraphs projection system. He does, like, Steamer-adjusted rankings. in like production on dollar value there, and then Gray does his own rankings. And I like comparing like between the three, like seeing what ADP is, seeing what they're going as, and kind of picking out those guys that have higher differentials, whether it be up or down. And Bauer is one that kind of stood out to me, and I know he was a little bit interesting because of how well he pitched at the end of last season, which, I mean, that comes up so much. I feel like you hear that all the time. You go, you look at the game log, rolling game log, whoever you want to look at, just general splits of a guy, and you see bad first half, good second half. And most of the time, when you look at the aggregate, that is generally what is more predictive year over year, from what I understand. As far, I'm not the biggest stats guy, I'm not a stat head. I do love stats, but I'm not regressing things in R every day when I get home. Like, I'm sure I know a lot of people are, and I admire them for that, but I don't do that. I like looking at a lot of the things around baseball, including that stuff. And yeah, I know they say you look at the season as a whole, but with some of these guys, I just get so enamored with what they changed. And the fact that I think a lot of the time what they change can be consistent. And that's how I tend to kind of pick out the guys that, you know, might be able to reproduce that second half season over a full year, as opposed to reverting back to a balance of the two, et cetera. And the biggest thing with Bauer is changing his curveball. So he's a big driveline guy. If anyone knows what driveline is, they're like the big kind of biomechanics, new school way of teaching pitching and understanding kinetic chain of flow from lower body to upper body and generating that into velocity. And Bauer's really into them. He does a lot of stuff with them. He's trained with them, and he's got, from his time in Arizona, he has like kind of a funky workout. And I know that kind of rubs people the wrong way, but I like unique pitchers, so I don't mind him at all. And he's always had a nasty curve when he pitched back with UCLA, and he refined that a bit. And honestly, aside from refining and getting more spin on it, spin usually leads to more break usually leads to more whiffs. Aside from that, he used it a ton, so he started to kind of get into this off-speed. You know, we have like the fly ball revolution, but we often kind of overlook the off-speed of revolution, where you have a ton of guys throwing over 30% breaking balls. And Bauer threw his curveball at the end of the year on, I think, like if you want to do like a rolling log basis. So if you, you know, you just kind of regress and look at three starts in a row, and then it changes the next time he starts, and just kind of, it's just a simple log of like how he's progressing as far as his pitch usage. That kind of got above 30% at the end of year, end of last year, if you look at from the second half onward. And yeah, it was a really good pitch. And when you use a really good pitch a lot, you know, you tend to kind of maybe expect it to not be as great, but his was fantastic. And you know, aside from that, he kind of jumped from a cutter to a slider as well, and that helped him out a bit as far as kind of generating horizontal differences as opposed to the vertical break that he gets on his curve. And, you know, I like him a lot. I like what he's given a lot. He's an SP3 right now. I think he's got potential to be kind of a low-end SP2 at his ceiling. Maybe I'm a little lower on the ceiling, but I think I'm kind of more just I've narrowed in on a range, whereas some people I know have him in the back end of that, like that SP3 and top SP4, so like right in that 40-ish range. But I think I have him higher in the 30s, probably low 30s, 30-ish one or 32-ish, maybe even high 20s as far as where I'd rank him on my starting pitching right now. You're catching me in kind of the – I've been slagging a little bit with my ranks as a whole, but I'm just put a couple hours in him today, and I'm going to do a lot this week and kind of finally get him out. But, yeah, I like Bauer a lot, honestly. I dug in, and, you know, I like the changes that he's made. I think the curveball is just a fantastic pitch, and he's just refining it. And he's still relatively young, you know. Indians have a hell of a track record with getting these guys and getting them good, even if, you know, Salazar has been hurt a ton. But I like Bauer a lot. I'm not all in on him, I would say, but I think he's definitely a guy I'm going to own a bunch of shares of.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said on Bauer. I'm a big fan of the development he's made. One thing I was paying attention to last year, which I really liked, is he basically became like an extension of Corey Kluber. He followed him around. He learned things. He picked his brain. Not a bad guy to learn from. So that helps a ton. You mentioned the curveball. You know, spin rate's a big deal. Like you said, everyone talks about the flyball revolution, and we don't really give the spin rate enough of acknowledgement. Like we saw what Lance McCullers did in the World Series, just threw his curveball over and over and over again. It's a pretty decent way to combat the flyball revolution if you throw it right. And you said it, second half of the year last year, he had a I believe it was a mid three or low three ERA last year. You look at all his projection or his numbers last year, the 4.19 ERA, but the FIP and XFIP of 3.88, 3.60. So definitely a chance to get even better. He had 10 Ks per nine. And you mentioned Steamer with Rudy, and he does his thing. And I love the Steamer projections for the reason that it's kind of the most, you know, tentative. They're not overestimating. So it's a good low like floor when I'm looking at projections. Absolutely. And, you know, they have him for a 4.17 ERA, but he's basically going to get you a K per inning they're projecting. There's a lot to like about Bauer, and I think he's only going to get better. So I agree with everything you said there. I like the fact he is, you know, on some people's boards, he slips into that fourth tier of pitchers where, you know, guys like us that like him, you can kind of sit back and go, okay, this could be my good, you know, SP3, even four on my staff just because of the area you can take him in. So
I'm a big fan of that.
Spot on, yeah.
Let's talk about this guy, Byron Buxton. I have been all over the Buxton train the last couple of years, and obviously anybody that knows baseball at all, I've been burned severely, like bad. Now, given last year, he brought it together in the second half way, way more consistently than the previous year's second half that everyone thought was the next coming.
Yeah.
But this looks like it could be. You did some work on him. What are you seeing? Is this something for real now?
I think it is. I think it is. And I think that I'm still kind of figuring out what the ceiling is for him. I think that's the biggest thing. I think in this column that I wrote, I kind of got asked a couple times about what's the peak season. Like, if everything clicks for him this year, what's his peak season? I had a really hard time trying to figure out where the power could go, because the adjustment I saw him make, if you kind of break down his tape throughout the season, he's made a lot of adjustments. And this one is the one probably I like the most, because I think it plays into what he does as a player the best, which is putting the ball in play, gap to gap, and running. So that's why I think at the end of the day, a lot of his value is going to come from his steals, which is completely fine if you're investing him, and that's why you're investing in him. But what he did was he kind of closed off his stance. He was always a little bit open, and he always tended to pull things. You'll notice on breaking balls a lot of the time what he ended up doing was throwing his hips down the third baseline, but keeping his barrel of the ball and everything towards like right center. And it was just a complete counterbalance of where his weight was going. But if you watch late in last season, there's a couple really, really good, honestly, just videos. I think if you just go to MLB.com and then go videos and search Buxton, look at any of his games late in the year in September. What he did was he literally just closed everything off. He's straight lined to the pitcher now. He's not open in his stance with his front foot from the right side. And he's staying inside the ball very, very well. And he's taking pitches that are on the outer third to right field. And I mean, you know, most of the time, if you look at like the general average on balls going the other way, it's not as beneficial to the hitter as balls that are being pulled to the pull side. But his line drive rate on those balls was pretty good. And if you're doing anything to the right side, you want it to be a line drive. And I loved what he did in that. And I think that that adjustment, as we're talking with Bauer, is another one in the second half that I think could stick, because there's tangible reasons as to why he did it, what it produced. And that projecting forward for me, I'm a lot more confident in assuming something like that can continue, as opposed to just a random change or, oh, I changed my eating habits, or I did this wrong or differently. And that stuff just doesn't tend to kind of manifest with me. And I like if you lot a lot of the hitting philosophy around this is staying inside the ball. And the thing with it, though, in as I mentioned briefly as I started this kind of rant here, is that I'm not sure where the power can go eventually, because if you stand the other way a lot, I don't think right now he has the raw power to put up 25 home runs if he's staying at the gap. He's going to get some balls, obviously, on the inner third that he's able to pull out, which is, I think he has the hands and the bat speed to do and hit those out and end up with 15 to 20 home runs. But the peak season for him, like in his absolute prime, if he figures everything out, I don't know, number one, that it's this year, but if it is kind of in the near future, I think he could kind of get to like 25 home runs, 40 bags, which is like top 30 player easy, especially in this steals landscape. It turns into like a Trey Turner-ish kind of guy. But this year coming, I kind of see more like a 15 to 18 home run kick with a bunch of steals, and the average is tolerable. You know, it's not Billy Hamilton average. It's probably in the 260s, 270s. 270s if he's lucky, actually, probably more in the 260s, 250s. But I like it. I think that he's not a finished product. And I enjoy investing in guys like this in dynasty leagues. But the issue is kind of that now in dynasty leagues, the value on him is kicking up a ton. So, you know, you got to pick your poison with him. I'll get a share here and there, but the price right now is pretty rich. I don't know what his ADP is. Get quick, but
he's 50. He's about 53 right now in the NFBC.
Yep.
And that's why I was going to ask is, you know, these projections, they're even confused on them. Like between Zips, Depth Chart, Steamer, and Fans 30, all the ones on Fangraphs right now, 18 to 22 homers, 21 to 34 stolen bases, a 246 to a 266 average. They're all over the board on him. They like literally, and that's how we all are, because like everything you said is the talent is legit. It is very, very legit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's why and you love it, I think, you know, like you see.
Oh, I loved every minute about it. This kid looks like, to me, he was Billy Hamilton 2.0, like a bigger and better Billy Hamilton. And we just haven't had it all come together yet. Now, the second half last year gave us great hope and optimism, but tweaking his swing, there's this, that, and the other. I had Nate Dawkins from the Nasty Cast on a couple times, but last year's episode before the season, he's a big Twins fan. Mm-hmm. So we talked Buxton, and he got into Buxton and how they were adjusting his stance and they wanted more uppercuts. And I said, they need to treat him like Willie Mays Hayes from the movie Major League. For every pop-up he hits, he needs to do push-ups. because this guy has so much speed. Get him on the base paths until he develops the power. Because even in the minors, even in the minors, he was never a double digit. He didn't have double digit homers till 2016. So it's like, I think the power is there. We could get a 20 guy, like a 20, 30 guy, like you're saying. But like you said, I don't know if it's there yet. And that's where the big question is, can you take him at pick 53?
I think it's a matter of how you value stolen bases. And if you look at a lot of aggregated ranks, the thing they push up is stolen bases. So if you look at, I reference Rudy's rankings a lot. I really like what he does and the adjustments he makes. So as far as baselining rankings, I tend to go that way with how Razzball ranks guys. It's just, it's my home. That's where I write, et cetera. I support them. But I generally do believe that they have a very good projection system and how they run and how they come up with dollar values. And if you look a lot of the times, when you look through those just dollar value projections based on what they're projecting the stats to be, very, very simple. Like just, this is what they're going to put out. This is the value of return. Based on that value returns, here's where the guy would rank 1 through 400, whatever they do. And a lot of the time when you scroll down that list, you see guys like VR and you see other guys where you're just kind of like, really, he can return that value. But then you look and you go, oh, it's all on stolen bases. So as a guy, like we're going to get into Gallo in a bit here. That's another guy where all his value is being returned on home runs. So it's like, it's a matter of how you value the statistic. If you're getting Billy Hamilton in like the 70s, wherever he's going, he's 62 right now. Like, you can't take Buxton too. It's just, it seems like overkill on stolen bases to me. Even if you know in your head that you got, you're probably competing with the guy who has Hamilton, you know, for that category, for the 1 point, if you're talking Roto side. But it's at pick 53, it's tough. I really want him to fall into like the sixth round to get a share. But I think that overall, too, my philosophy when I go into a lot of drafts, just something I've held for the last couple of years, is that I tend to devalue pitching a little bit on the top end. And I tend to devalue stolen bases a little bit. And I tend to kind of go with the more of the guys that I think could put up. If they're going to steal, like, I want them to also hit for average and hit for power. And that's a very select tier. That's like 1 through 20. That we're talking like Tommy Pham's a guy I like a little bit this year. He's a guy like, he could put up 15-ish stolen bases. He could get you non-zero in stolen bases, but he could also do everything else. And you're confident in him doing everything else. Whereas with Buxton, I can't say I'm confident in him hitting for power, hitting for average, driving in runs. I probably have confidence in him getting runs because the Twins offense should be okay, top of lineup, and him stealing bases. But that's 2 for 5. You know, if I'm taking a guy like him, if I'll sacrifice 20 bags if I could convince myself that Pham's 100% across the board contributing, you know, 280, 25 home runs, 15 bags, 90-90. Like, that's a reasonable projection for Pham. And I think that, you know, if you, they're very similar in their ADP right now. So it's like the volatility in Buxton, sure, but it's a lot about team construction to me. I guess if you want a binary answer on if I take him 53 overall, it's no, I wouldn't take him 53 overall. I'd really hope he falls kind of into that fifth, sixth round, but I have a feeling I'm going to be in a lot of drafts with people who are, you know, if you're in a draft with 12 people, one of those guys is going to be like, yeah, I think I believe in Buxton and jump him up. So it's tough. So we're actually doing another dynasty draft with some guys who run real fake dynasty baseball. And I kind of wish I got Buxton there. I think I would have paid up in a dynasty like that. I would have paid probably top 50 overall value on him, but I think he actually went earlier than that. But I would have paid that in dynasty, because I think long-term I really like what he can do and he's really young. But snapshot right now going into 2018, it's tough. It's really tough for me. And you're saying, like, this, the projection systems are volatile, analysts are volatile. It's just, he's polarizing.
Well, he's very polarizing, and the stolen base category alone, and you hit the question I was going to ask, is how do you approach it in a draft? I'm the same way for the most part, unless, you know, my team's being built a certain way where I can gamble on a Hamilton or something. I like those guys that are going to give me 15 to 20 homers, 15 to 20 steals, hit for 280 plus, so on and so forth. They're going to keep me healthy in every category and build my team that way. And they talked about it on the Flags Fight Forever pod, because Brett Sayre is a big Hamilton guy, and he has – tons of validation behind it. I get it all. But it's like he said, is you kind of have both sides. You're either one or the other, it seems like. And they made a good point that it makes – you have to have the game plan. You have to have the structure. I believe it was George Bissell that said, I like doing the kind of plan we like to do, where it's, you know, 15, 15, whatever. And because when one guy gets hurt, it doesn't completely screw up your stats. If Billy Hamilton gets hurt, you have no stolen bases.
It's the thing, especially if you structure your team like, I just have Billy for stolen bases, you know?
Exactly.
So it's like, it's a really a big preference thing. It's really tough. Yeah. I just tend to, if I'm going to win a league, I'm fine with winning that league, trying to pick out the hitters who I think will blow up, winning four of the five hitting categories, and then winning like the ratios and saves. Like, I like structuring your team like that because I think I have a better chance to finish top four and then pick a guy who could shoot me up to top two. But with Hamilton, it's just different. You know, it's tough. It's tough. I think about this every day. I actually kind of want to make a team. I want to get a team somewhere where I draft Billy Hamilton and Joey Gallo just because it's like, I think that'd be a hell of fun. Like, I'd lose average immediately. I'd be burdened. But
do it in an OBP league.
Yeah, it's true.
That's fun with that.
Yeah, get his 14% walk rate on Gallo, but yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, no, that's why I love, you know, just making this list of players. We're in a debate, and it's going to open up a ton of talking points that are going to help people, because you look at all these drafts, the mock drafts we do and everything, and there's so many different angles you can take. And, you know, we mentioned Buxton's going 53. You mentioned Tommy Pham's going 59. Hamilton's going 62. Let's talk about Christian Yelich. He's going 59 also. There's that range right there of very talented guys. Yelich is the mold of that guy that gets you some homers, stolen bases, average, so on and so forth. Obviously, new change of scenery. He's going to be in Milwaukee, which should help him a lot, given everyone swears he's only a ground ball hitter. But I think there'll be some adjustments made. What are you looking at with Christian Yelich?
Yeah, you alluded to it very briefly there as the adjustment side. This is something I dug into with video on him, comparing him to some other guys who were similar in the profile from the left side, similar in swing path, which I thought, and actually the two I brought up were Alex Gordon and Joey Votto, and obviously fleeting comp on Votto. He's not the same kind of hitter. But as far as the structure on the swing goes, they resemble what I hope Yelich can get to allow him to tap into more power. And I wrote a column about how I'm not 100% sure how much Miller helps him. And I think that that's kind of a consensus right now. And I know that a lot of people kind of shoot him up a ton because of it, but you got to understand with Yelich that a lot of his home runs, he's hitting to right center. So if you look at his spray chart, he's not a full pull power guy. So like you look at Alex Gordon's spray chart, he was the guy I compared his swing path to. Alex Gordon's power was all to right field. Like Alex Gordon got into very few balls to right center and to center, and Yelich is gap to gap. And the other misconception, the biggest misconception with Yelich is that he's a ground ball hitter, but where he sits as far as launch angle goes between 0 and 10 degrees is actually a really, really productive window, except that it does not result in any power whatsoever. But the average on balls in that 0 to 10 window is like 450. And it's really weird because the thing with getting that window of 0 to 10 on the launch angle side, I think his average is like 7-point-something or 5-point-something. But a lot of ground balls that are hit that are unproductive are below 0. But if you're hitting in that 0 to 10, and this is actually a place that Goldschmidt hits a ton too. His average exit velocity, or excuse me, launch angle in this kind of window, he doesn't stay away from it a ton. He's not like Yonder Alonso, everything's going to the sky. But it's really productive for a guy to sit in there and produce on the average side and produce doubles. And that's where Yelich sits. And it's a matter for me of like, do I think the environment of him going to Miller Park sways him to change his path at all to kind of elevate and possibly get into more pull side power? And at the end of the day, I think the answer is no. Whereas I think a lot of people are assuming the answer is going to be yes. I think he can make some adjustments and that'll help him out. But I don't know. Like this is one of those things, like you got to understand what he's going to do. You know, I haven't seen, sure. He's actually a guy I want to watch in spring, just see if I notice any differences in how he's hitting. And I don't know if he's played yet or I just haven't seen him, but I wanted to take a look at some of his tape. But it's a tough one because we don't know is the question. We don't know if he's going to change his swing. If you take the Yelich from last year and put him in Miller Park, it's better, but it's not 28 to 35 home runs better. You know, it's not that window that everyone I think is kind of like, oh, he can get there with Miller, but it's like, he can get there with Miller, but he's got to go all pull side for that. And then you're taking away a lot of the average. You're taking away a lot of the other stuff that I think he'd be very productive in. But the thing that actually blows me away the most is that Razzball has him ranked inside, like as far as returning value wise, they have him ranked, I think, 19th overall, which is the biggest discrepancy they have on a guy that's top 50. It's about like 40-ish rank off. So what they're projecting, what Rudy's adjusting off of Steamer, Rudy believes generates back top 20 value. And that is aggressive. And I kind of see it if this adjustment's made, but it's a big if then for me. And that's where I'm kind of hung up. But I will make sure I own some shares as I do. Buxton's going to be tough for me to own some shares. I'm going to own some shares of Bauer, but Yelich, I'm going to make sure I own some Yelich shares, even if I have to overpay.
Yeah, and I like it a lot. You made a great point, is he might not need to be that guy. He's still been 18 homers last year, 21 the year before. roster resource has him leading off. If he's your leadoff guy and you have Kane and maybe Thames certain days, but Braun and you have Domingo Santana, Travis Shaw, those are your power bats. Just get on base. Do what you do best. Hit, go find the gaps. I think one thing he may do more of, because Craig Counsell does that, and I know people have talked about it, is steal bases. This guy does have, you know, close to 20-20 potential, if not like 15-20 or something. He hits close to 290 plus 300. On base percentage leagues, even better. I think it's a great point you're making that he doesn't need to make the adjustment. I wouldn't be shocked if he makes a little, because I do remember when he does hit home runs, he can crush them. The guy's got power.
He's got power.
I've seen him in Miami just destroy some balls, but it's not his game, and it wasn't Ichiro's game. They have a similar you break down the footage way more than I do, but just kind of the slap at the ball, just gap-to-gap type thing. They got a lot of that together, and that could be a very good point that most people aren't paying attention to. But a 2020 guy that hits 290 plus is going to score close to 100 runs, drive in 80 plus. That is tremendous return.
Like it's fantastic return, regardless of anything that happens. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm interested. It's one of those things too. Like, I feel like a lot of people might take credit if they rank him super high, like and then he returns that. You're like, oh, you should have taken him earlier. But I want to go back and look at all those people and go, did you think he was going to make an adjustment? Because that is, for me, that's the main thing. Like, you can buy into him and say he's a top 20 player, but you have to also buy into the fact he's making an adjustment. I think that he's going to be a very productive hitter this year. I'd be stunned if he falls outside of like top 60 value. Honestly, like, that's a really, really good floor. And if you're into that floor and you want to, I mean, you combo up like Yelich and Pham right there, there's a good shot you're getting like 40 bombs, 30 bags with really, really stable average, decent counting stats. Maybe not so much on the RBI side. Pham should be hitting in the heart of the order where Yelich is going to lead off, but I like that combo a lot from the outfield perspective. I know that a lot of people kind of wait on outfield because it's deep, but I tend to kind of veer more towards the best player available strategy, and I've run with that for the last couple of years. And I'm gonna get some shares of Yelich. I'm really interested to see what happens to him this year.
Yeah, and just a brief side note, we'll go to the next guy. But when it comes to the outfield thing, I used to wait a lot. I'm already noticing this year, especially in five outfielder leagues, go get some of the bigger boys early, because it. There's guys out there, but it gets iffy quick.
It's a lot of like bets. Like, it's a lot of like, oh, if this guy does four things differently, maybe he'll return top 100. But it's not like, like a couple years ago, I think Pollock was sitting down there. A lot of people liked him. Yep. It's tough. There's value there, and you can find guys you like, but it thins out. It does thin out.
Thins out a ton. Let's go to a starting pitcher, Cincinnati Reds. Great rookie campaign. You know, to start the year, he was Mr. Helium when it came to starting pitchers, but now he's sitting around 101, 33rd pitcher off the board in the NFBC. Luis Castillo was phenomenal last year. His stuff is filthy. Everything profiles great. Young arm, everything you want to see. Are you all in on Castillo like some other big names out there, or are you kind of, he's young, I got to see more?
Yeah, I'm all in on him, actually. I want to consider myself a little bit of a hipster on him, because I wrote about him last September when he was shut down. And I was just kind of looking for a story, and I dug into him, and I was just kind of like, oh my God, like, you look at what he did. He came up. I actually remember watching his first start against the Nationals, where he came up and everyone was like, oh, young kid coming up, got electric fastball, throws really hard. Let's see. And then the consensus after that game was his fastball was too straight. Everyone was just like, he's okay. Yeah. His fastball is really, really straight, whatever. And it's like, all right, I get that. It's an understandable knock, whatever. But what he did was he added a two-seamer, and when he added his two-seamer, he elevated his fastball. And when you elevate a fastball with a lower spin rate, that tends to be a little bit more productive. So if you split up his location chart on just his four-seamer right after he added this two-seamer, it elevates a ton. So the fact that he elevated that fastball and he was able to use that two-seamer to kind of target the bottom of the zone, so he had another pitch to, instead of throwing everything up and breaking balls, he was able to kind of go two-seamer low, four-seamer high. He made both of those pitches better. And that is just unbelievable to me. Like, I love that adjustment. I love that pitch was effective, that he found a way to make a pitch with a lower spin rate in his fastball that doesn't really have too much jump on it, that wasn't really getting a lot of people out, a lot of people were tagging it. He found a way to make that pitch productive, and he's got unbelievable stuff otherwise. And he falls into this really, really interesting category of a lot of strikeouts, really good swing and miss on all his pitches, including his changeup, and he gets a ton of ground balls. He gets a lot of ground balls on his changeup. He gets a lot of ground balls on that two-seamer, et cetera. And that is a combo that very few guys fall into. You see guys like Dallas Keuchel's probably the biggest brainchild of it, where, and he's such an outlier. I don't like any Keuchel comp just because of if you look at any of his heat maps on where he throws his pitches, it is pinpoint accuracy at the bottom of the zone. It's one of the most unbelievable. Like, heat maps get really boring to look at. And if you think they're boring to look at, go look at Dallas Keuchel's and you'll be like, I don't understand how anyone could be that consistent that low in the zone. It's bonkers. He blurs the line between strike and ball at the bottom of the zone. And one of the things he does really well is he misses a lot of bats and he creates a lot of ground balls, which is just a beautiful combination. And I'm going to say, like, Castillo reminds me a ton of Paxton from last year, who's another guy that I was absolutely all in on just because I loved everything he was doing. I bought into the arm slot change and kind of that mitigating some of the health risk. And he returned better value than where his ADP was at the end of the year, which is something I don't think a lot of people harp back on, because there was a lot of people going, oh, I don't know about his ADP, whatever. He was going like 120-ish. I think he returned top 90 value, even with the limited innings he threw. He was a very, very good pitcher when he was on the mound. I was all in. I had him in a ton of leagues. He hurt me when he was out, but when he was in there, my ratios were unbelievable. And with Castillo, it seems like the helium is getting a little bit crazier than I thought it would. And the biggest bummer for me is that I didn't buy in earlier. I don't have any leagues that drafted early where I got a jump on him. So I'm going to be paying face value. Like, I think he can return what Paxton did last year. I think he is that kind of pitcher where you can return top 80 value, but you're paying 95 overall tag. Whereas last year you could have gotten Paxton like 140 and he returned top 90. And I think I saw him 140-ish ADP everywhere, and I was willing to go up to about 100 on him, which was much more aggressive than a lot of people were. I think I ranked him like 95 to start the year, and everyone was like, that's dumb. And I was like, you got to buy in on these guys. Like, if you want to get an ace, like, I love Castillo. And if you filter the NFBC ADP for the first of the year through today, it actually, his ADP is already up to 95. And it's a little scary because that's six spots and that's one of the bigger risers. And I think a lot of people are just buying in because they're seeing what I'm seeing, and it's completely understandable. And I love him, but I'm a little worried that it's going to get a little bit too rich. But he's another guy where I'm just going to have to get a share or two because I'm so all in. Yeah. I have to, you got to kind of put your money where your mouth is sometimes. And that's where I'm going with him.
Yeah. I absolutely love Castillo. He's, you know, people point at the home run to fly ball at 17.2%. That was great American small park people. Just let that one slide. Even with that, he had a 3.12 ERA, struck at almost 10 batters per nine. The kid is legit. The part I like the most, and it could be concerning because 2016, he threw 31, 32 innings. Last year, he threw almost 170 innings. So he stretched out, which is the part I like the most about him.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to like, because a lot of those young arms, you got your handicap because you only get so many innings. This, knock on wood, should be good to go.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about a big power bat out of the Bay Area, and it's not Barry Bonds. It is Matt Olson. This guy came on the scene last year, and I talked about him 2 years ago as a first base prospect to keep an eye on. He exploded last year. People, when Rhys Hoskins was having his moment, Matt Olson showed up, and he tried to one-up them, and he might have, depending on who you talk to. You did a great – comp video about him, and I know you've looked at him some more. What are you looking at for Matt Olson this year?
Yeah, it was funny. I almost forgot that I wrote about him a while ago. I had to go back to that column and remember, because right when Hoskins was killing it, I think I wrote a column about Olson. I am kind of here and there on Olson, and I don't really know why, because the power's legit. I actually, the funniest thing is I like the A's as a team this year. They have some sneaky. They got my boy Piscotty. I always love Piscotty. I'm a Cardinals fan. Piscotty's a guy that I love, and I love. I just like him a lot. I think from an OBP standpoint, he's really good, and he does a lot of things well on the diamond. It's not. He's just kind of like your typical like 15-15, 280 guy with like a 340 OBP. He's like productive, but never shines. Whatever. But that team has a lot of those weird components. Like Blake Treinen, the pen's pretty good. Ryan Dull's not a bad reliever. They got a lot of weird, like Chris Davis to DH. I actually like kind of. I think they're moving Joyce to left. And then they got Olson, and he's got a big, big power bat. And the adjustment that I liked that he made from the prior, he completely changed what he was doing. And he actually like probably added to his mechanics. A lot of people kind of tend to think that simplifying is the way to go, which is, it's often the case. A lot of I do kind of these side by side gifs. I try to put one up every Monday, and I'll probably be picking it up as we get into the season. I really like doing those just from my own understanding of what the guys are doing too. And I think other people appreciate it, But yeah, Olson, I mean, he was really compact, actually, and he just got his hands all out over the plate. He actually reminds me a little bit of, this is kind of a funny comp, but Shohei Ohtani, a little bit, how his hands are. preload. Like, Ohtani is a much bigger leg kick. Olsen doesn't really have too much of his lower body in there. He kind of gets in his back hip a little more. But as far as where their hands go, you don't see a lot of guys with their hands, like, extended out over the plate. And Ohtani does this, and Matt Olsen does this. And I can't really think of anyone else that kind of does it. But Olsen's load, as far as when he goes back, is really simple. Once he gets into his hands out, it's straight back and it's straight through the zone. And he hit some bombs that were just, oh my God, those balls just kept going. I honestly might want to do a redive on him just to kind of get a better understanding. I think the thing that I didn't like that I was a little hesitant on was the fact that he's got some split issues and platoon issues. And this happens a lot with lefty bats, where I think he could be limited playing time wise. But at the same time, I mean, if he still puts up 30 home runs and limited playing time, it just makes his value overall better. So I think he's a hell of a bat to invest in if you need power, especially if you're going kind of contact and approach to start a draft. I like him a lot. And this kind of goes over to Gallo, who is also kind of on this list here.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect segue, because you got Matt Olson. He's going since the first. He's going about 126 at the first base position. You got Joey Gallo, who's going about 115, a guy that we know is just light tower power, 41 bombs, OBP at 333 with a batting average of 209. So depending on your league format, you can pick your poison there. But the Gallo train continues to steam forward, and people are really jumping on it. Are you on the train this year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm close to almost all in with Gallo. I'll take him probably above 20 spots of where he's going right now. He's going to 114. I think that's absolute steal. What he's projected for right now on his baseline, which is steamer, it's basically almost duplicating last year. A little bit of an average jump, a little bit of a K drop, which is what I like. Just, I think they're actually kind of just doing that based off general aging curve, which I like a ton, because he's kind of getting to that peak power age. And the drop off for power hitters is pretty starch if you look at or staunch. I don't know why I said starch. That's a weird, like, starch is like,
well, he hits the ball so hard it just stiffens the air.
Exactly. That's what they put in, like, shirts, right? Like, Jesus Christ. Yes. but yeah, I mean, I don't know where I lost my train of thought here, but
it's on. Joey Gallo does that to people when you just watch his home run films. It just makes you go to a different universe.
I know what I was going with here. I was just saying, like, they're taking off the general aging curve for big power hitters like this falls off very quickly. Staunch, that's it. Staunch kind of fall off where it falls off. And he's getting up to that peak in general where you hit that 27 mark before you fall off after. And this is just general aggregate aging curves. I'm not saying on any specific cases. You can pick out a ton of guys who are 32 and hitting bombs. Zimmerman hit like 30-something last year. He was old. But yeah, Gallo is if you look at his baseline of what he's going to produce, it is top 100. And I'm still relatively baffled he's going to 114, 150. I really don't know why. I just don't kind of get if you're having him around 114, you're basically expecting almost an average drop as well as a home run drop. And that puts him around like 120. If you just expect a duplicate of last year, it's top 100. If you expect any improvement at all, he jumps up to the 80s. And that's why I'm willing to take him 20 spots ahead, because if I pay face value of what he produced last year and I'm expecting a little bit of improvement based on that kind of aging curve, based on some strikeout increases and improvement in his approach, decreases in strikeouts, he's just going to produce more. And less strikeouts means that average is going to go up. And if you're thinking about a guy who could put up Stanton-like home run totals with not nearly the same anything else that Stanton does, but just pure home run side, who could lead the league in homers, it's Gallo for me if you're going on a dark horse pick. Home run title, I actually think the home run title in the AL could be pretty interesting between Judge, Stanton, and Gallo. And I feel like it could be this interesting play of just like you have the two guys obviously in New York battling against each other, but Gallo is going to be right behind him. Gallo is going to have 40-ish home runs easy, and I think he could challenge 50-plus if he gets any bit of an approach change going. And I think in the column I wrote, I mentioned that he peaked in far of his K rates. He was like 40-something% strikeout rate middle of the year, and then it fell off a ton. Yeah. And I just really hope if he baselines that throughout the year, that's what I'm hoping for. He'll be a stud. That's a guy, like, I love guys like this who are just misperceived on ADP, to my opinion, where he's already producing off of what he did last year, 20 spots above his ADP. So it's like, I'll pay 20 spots above his ADP. If he duplicates what he gave me last year, returns face value. If he does better than what he did last year, and I expect any improvement, he's returning excess value. And this late in a draft, like, I'm very content taking Gallo. I think I'm going to end up with Gallo in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, you got to like him, because everything you said, and you look at 37% K rate all of last year in 145 games, people need to realize that's nothing to be too worried about, in my opinion, for the fact that it was his first real look in the bigs. And it wasn't even – they are always moving him around positions, DH, this, that, and the other. He should play almost every day between DHing and first base. That's one positive there. They haven't projected, like you said, Steamer got about 228 average. If people are new to the fantasy game, if people are new to the fantasy game, you'll remember this name, Lance. It was probably 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago. There's this man named Adam Dunn who would hit about 215 and hit 40 plus homers, and he was like the fifth first baseman off the board. People like flocked to him. Gallo's better.
If you look at the thing is, one of the things that blows my mind the most about Gallo, go back, I follow a lot of like the prep prospects and stuff, and I love watching Perfect Game, which is out in San Diego. They do like kind of, it's all the high school kids, the top ones go and play. If you go back and watch, like I think it was 2009 or 2011, I don't remember what year, Gallo hits a ball in San Diego. Oh my God. Just the fact that that kid was 17 years old and he hit that ball that far, like, he's man child in what he does. And it's just, yeah, I think that the thing is, like, if you're talking guys that are going to jump up in next year, be like top 60 picks, I honestly think Gallo can be up there. If he puts up another good season and you see a strikeout rate drop at any extent, he's returning top 70 value. And then it's a matter of like next year, it's going to be the off season of like thinking he can do more. Can he hit 240? Can he hit 235, 245, you know? And it's like, if you get at that point and you have his power potential hitting 245, like you that average hit. Cause oh my God, the home runs are just insane.
Yeah. And he's only 24. So it's only going to keep getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about another youngster, pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, one of their top pitching prospects. People thought he'd be in the starting rotation by now, and he's coming out of the bullpen, which could be a sneaky nice late play in your drafts. In 15-teamers, I definitely have a share of him in one spot. I'm talking about Josh Hader, lefty with the flows, the Lance Brezdowski flows. and I think – I'm curious to see what they do with him personally, but – big time strikeout stuff. Control has been an issue, and that's kind of why they're keeping him there, I think. I think he's also working on a third pitch, if I'm not mistaken. But he was very good out of the pen for them last year. What are you looking at with Josh Hader?
Yeah, I like Hader a lot in roto leagues as far as helping out your ratios. I tend to go with a lot of these guys who I think can kind of produce a lot. And I think Hader's kind of a consensus guy. Like if you look at a lot of pure relief pitcher non-closer ranks, he's up there in terms of what he can produce back as far as value goes, just because of his ratios and what he's done. But he's really, really good. He's a really, really good pitcher, I think, overall, just on his fastball slider. I know he's got some walk problems, but the fact that he's able to do what he does and his FIP is so low, even though he's given up a ton of walks, it just speaks to the testament of his skill set. This slider is just unhittable from the left side. It's actually pretty good from the right side, too. He just hides it well enough that it's tough for righties to pick up. But yeah, you mentioned he's kind of working on a third pitch. He's had that third pitch for a bit. It's his changeup. He's modified the grip on it last spring, and I'm interested to see if he does anything more with it. But from my perspective and what I wrote about, he kind of tended to throw two of them. He threw one that was a little bit harder earlier in the count, then one was a little bit lighter. So generally when you have a higher velocity and a changeup, it results in a little bit more on the ground ball side of things. It mimics the two-seamer a little bit more. And if you take a little bit off of it and you get a little more break on it, it turns into a whiff pitch. And, you know, there's a very small subset of guys who have a nice blend of the two. Steven Strasburg's changes is probably the best in baseball. Used to be Felix Hernandez's, was a really good ground ball pitch, and really good whiff pitch. And Hader's is still kind of finding that balance. And I actually would be interested to see if he uses it more as a changeup, as more of a two-seamer, so a little bit harder. He has a harder variety of the changeup that I think he could actually use to his advantage and almost basically turn into like kind of a two-seam fastball slider guy. But the changeup is essential, absolutely essential for him if he wants to neutralize right-handed batters and turn into a starting pitcher. That's where I think his biggest problem is. Deep down, I really want him to be a starter, but I approve of the decision to keep him in the pen just because I don't think that changeup is good enough right now to get through the lineup X amount of times. But you could have him in there for like two innings. Like he could run in like a Devenski kind of role where he's Chris Devenski from the Astros, who I'm referencing there, where he's throwing two or three innings and can be pretty good. Get through a lineup once, try to get around those right-handed bats. But he's a really, really good weapon for them to have if you got a couple lefties coming up in a lineup in a row. You know, Cubs got Rizzo and a couple others. Cardinals really don't have any big lefties. Carpenter actually, but he's pretty good against left-handed pitchers. I like him. I like him a lot. I think he's around like 300 overall right now. I think that's perfectly fine. Like I love it as far as just helping out your ratios, honestly.
No, I agree. I think that Devenski type role could fit him supremely. I think there's a lot of luxuries Council can use him for, you know, late inning lefty, like loogie guy, or he can give you an inning or two. So I definitely like where they're going with that. Last guy we'll bring up, and I added him last minute just because I saw tweet about him today, and I'm just curious on what your thinking is. I agree with everything you tweeted about, but Dansby Swanson, once, you know, number one draft pick for the Diamondbacks, traded to the Braves, and that wonderful Shelby Miller deal. And he had his chance last year, and he had a lot of growing pains in the bigs. But the talent's there. The talent's legit with Swanson. No one can really argue that. Are you buying in on him? Because a lot of people are straying away from him right now.
Yeah, it's so this literally happened today. Like, I'll say that. So, like, I'm still digesting what I saw. But he took a pitch. He took an inside fastball from Scherzer and just bombed it. And actually, before I jumped into this podcast, I was just making up actually a GIF. We had some extra time here. Shoot that GIF out on Mondays. Tomorrow's is going to be Swanson. What I noticed with him, I was jumping around a bunch of spring training games this morning. I was watching. I put on that because I want to see Acuna hit. And Swanson came up and popped that ball. What I noticed with him, and I tend not to notice this a lot with guys I don't watch a lot, but I immediately noticed that his hands were lower in where he started them. So he starts his hands now really low. And I didn't get enough of a look to see if it was a consistent thing. But in the at-bat against Scherzer he had in the first inning where he hit this home run, he did it on the first and the second pitch where he basically just like completely relaxes his body and starts with his hands really low and then kind of like shimmies up into his regular swing. And he's got a guy like Brendan Rodgers, shortstop for the Rockies, who's a prospect we're probably going to see at the end of this year. Possibly he's going to be starting second baseman next year for the Rockies. He has one of the smoothest swings like you're ever going to see. And it's eerily similar to Dansby Swanson's. And the question with Rodgers, as it is kind of for Swanson now, is like how much power can be there? And I don't really know. I don't want to overreact on one at-bat, one sample, but I just like really simple changes like this where he seems like he's doing something consciously to relax himself at the plate, probably not start his hands as high and tense up a little bit too much. He wants to start him a little bit lower. This is actually something Zach Cozart did, which is another GIF that I kind of broke down. Cozart used to have his hands really high over his head, and what he did was he brought him flat onto his shoulder and literally just stood there until the pitch came, then he loaded up and swung. And he had a ton of home runs with that. And aside from him being healthy, that was one of the components that he said, just relax him at the plate. And I kind of thought, like, maybe Swanson's trying to do that. And I looked at Steamer projected him for only 9 home runs. That's an easy over for me. Like, I'd love to see. I don't know who does, like, if you do betting at all. Like, I jump over Vada. I always do a couple futures bets. If they put an over-under on Swanson's home runs, like, I'm taking that right now. I think can easily hit 12. You know, like 9 is so low. Like if it's higher than that, okay, maybe I don't want to get too confident with it. But he's the everyday shortstop. I like him a lot. I'll take that back. I don't like him a lot. I'm interested to see kind of where this goes long term. And I think it's – I don't want to overreact is the main thing. So I'm not bullish on him. I'm not flat on him. I'm not punting him. I'm not kind of acquiring him, whatever. But he's going 387 overall in drafts. My philosophy has always been, like, once you get past 250, I really don't care what you do. If you want to draft David Ortiz hoping he comes back, like, there's a really good chance that the guy I'm drafting is probably going to return negative value and David Ortiz returns nothing. So, like, you went out taking David Ortiz, you know, something dumb like that. So, exactly. 387 overall, he's around, like, Troy Tulowitzki and Joe Panik. Like, no offense to Giant fans out there, but, like... what are those guys going to return? We already know Tulo's hurt. Average guy, pure average. Like Corey Spangenberg is right in that same window. Like I don't even know how many people know who Corey Spangenberg is. If you're just a casual fantasy player, like take the shot on Swanson, go 50 spots above where he's going ADP wise and scoop him. Like you just guys like this, they put it together. He puts up a 20 home run season. He's going to be like a top 150 pick next year. You know, like, I'm interested. I don't want to overreact too much. I'm thinking about writing a column on it possibly, but I want to see a little more than just the one at bat I saw.
No, and I like it because, like I said, the talent's there. He just hasn't found it yet. So, you know, you get him in, you know, 360-ish, somewhere in that range, you could easily get 150 value out of him because the talent is legit. So, like you said, you know, maybe he figures it out. And if he doesn't, you draft him that late, you can drop him. It's exactly. That simple. Like, it's not going to hurt your team. Yeah, it's not going to hurt your team. So it's one of those guys to look at later in drafts.
We take this brief break from Benched with Bubba to talk to you about RotoWear. It's one of the best quality shirts in the industry. When I mean industry, all the clothing industry, the fantasy sports industry, because people are rocking it. They're loving it. You're seeing it in a lot of big outlets now. No other brand can compete with RotoWear in terms of quality. They're premium blend fabric, super soft, comfortable, athletic fit shirts. They specialize with a special printing process. The design is part of the shirt. Literally, it is dyed and bleached into the fabric. No thick ink. There's over 30 different designs right now. It's just crazy all the stuff they have coming out, and there's more and more stuff every time you turn your head. They have fantasy football, baseball, hockey, basketball, some really cool DFS ones, but everything's great. They have men's, women's, and kids. Check them all out. Go to rotoware.com, rotoware.com. Check them out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at RotoWare. But the cool part, guys, if you use the promo code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, you get 20% off your order. Again, promo code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S. Check their site out. Check them Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. They're always giving away free shirts. And then when you go to purchase the ones you want for you, your loved ones, your friends, your family, whatever, use promo code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, for 20% off your order. Now back to this week's episode of Benched with Bubba.
I could talk players with you all day, so I think we'll have to do that again sometime. But let's go into a draft you took part in recently, a CBS NL-only auction draft. And first off, I believe you were the champion last year?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, it was my big, yes. My first Expert League title. Yeah, it was funny, too, because it was I'll admit, I don't know how many times I've been. That was the first time I did, like, an industry NL-only. Like, I really had never played NL-only. And I just kind of built a strategy. What I really like doing for auctions like this is literally just putting the players down that you want and working them into your budget and coming up with a range of what you want to pay. And then in draft, when those guys come up on the board, you look at what your values are and then you bid up until the point. Like, I know a lot of people have really hard line auction values. I'm not that way. Like, I don't do that. If I want a guy, I'm going to pay $3 over. I don't care. I don't think that there's a massive difference between 27 and 30 for a guy, you know? Like, it doesn't matter that much to me. If I'm buying into a guy and I project him out and put up a window, I'm fine with going a couple over that window. And I think that might be what helps me a little bit, and also probably what hurts me a little bit on some of the picks I had last year that screwed me over. But I mean, I'm going to admit, one of the reasons I won last year was because I took Cody Bellinger pretty late. So we have like an auction that runs for your starting lineup, and then there's a reserve draft. And I knew I had a late pick in the reserve draft. Like, I had like the back end pick. So what I did was, I actually, when everyone was down to $1 bids, I bid $1 on Cody Bellinger before he was even up on like the reserve side, because everyone just assumed he was going reserve side. But I was like, I'm going to bid $1 now. Everyone else has $1, so no one can upbid me. And I won Cody Bellinger, put him on my bench, stashed him in. He won me the league, honestly. And I just literally went combo up. I only started Kershaw and DeGrom. I got to my innings total, and then I just went all relievers. And I ended up scooping Brandon Morrow. So the Dodgers helped me a ton, obviously. Brandon Morrow. I had like a Rodas Vizcaino when Jim Johnson dropped out of the closer role in Atlanta. It's just a lot of things clicked. I don't know if I'm going to defend my title this year. I got to say, I like my team. I think I'm going to be competitive. But, man, NL only is a beast, dude.
Yeah, it's – looking at these teams and the links on CBS Sports, they do a great job, actually. There's one column position by position, high price to low price, and another column – I'm looking at it right now, and all the players and their teams, and it's really, really good. And I'm on yours right now. I am intrigued by a couple of things. First off, we'll start with your rotation. I'm a big fan of how you did this, because people need to take into consideration it is NL only. So they're going to have a lot of names you usually would have nothing to do with. Just remember that out the gate. But I love your big three of Strasburg, John Gray, and Luis Gohara. I love Gohara this year. Big time fan of his. And then you backed it up with guys like Waka and Nelson, who comes back after a few months, who could be great for $5. And you know he's returning more than $5 in value last year. And Waka could easily get you past $8 the way things could change for him. So I like your staff. Is there anything different you would have done with your pitching? Any guys you might have thought back and I should have paid more for? Or are you pretty good with your starting pitchers?
Oh, absolutely. The immediate one that comes to mind is Luis Castillo. The thing with this draft was that, you know, as I said, I break out every guy that I want. And then when those come up on the auction, I pay based off that. So like, I look at who's up on the board. And the funniest thing with this was like,
oh, wow,
the three guys who were on my team, I looked at them and they all came up in like the first 10 picks. And I was like, so I have to spend all my money now. And it froze me. And it was like one of those things that was just blown away. But Luis Castillo went for like 18. And I don't know why I didn't pay more. I've been talking him up my whole life. But the thing that I think happened to me was I got money shy. So like, I think I bought, I want to look at who was auctioned off when, but it's quick. Cause it's like, I spent like 30 something. No, what did I spend on Marcel? I spent 29 on Ozuna, which is probably a little bit of an overpay. And I think I spent that very shortly after I spent 22 on Ozzie Albies, which I actually like the value on. So I was like literally $60 down, and then Luis Castillo comes up. I already had Strasburg for 27, who I think I absolutely love Strasburg this year.
That's a great price, really is.
If there's anyone that's going to jump up into the elite tier of pitchers where your Sale, Kluber, Scherzer, Kershaw, it's Strasburg for me. And I don't think there's any other debate for anyone else. It's clear front runner right now is Steven Strasburg for me to jump up into that tier. So I was a guy, I was paying whatever. I'll pay 32 for him. I don't care. Like, that was what I came into this draft as, which I know is, again, it's a strategy I know you're going to hear that a lot of people go away from, but it's just kind of how I run. Like, if I want a guy, I'm going to invest him and go that way. And it's going to hurt me a ton. I know that, but in situations where it works out, it works out. But yeah, I'm still kicking myself about not paying at least like 22 for Castillo. Like, if I just, like, the thing is, like, the worst part is, like, give me, like, let me toss back John Gray for 16 and let me find my $6, take it out elsewhere, and give me Castillo. And I would be enamored with this team if I had Strasburg Castillo. And that's just that. I was kicking myself so hard on that when I saw that value go. I don't know what I did. Like, I think I just got money shy. I saw all my money go off the board. I know I was one of the people in the draft who spent a lot early, which for some reason tends to happen. I think it's because I just like certain guys and they tend to come up early. But it was tough. It was tough for me to sleep that night knowing I passed on an $18 Luis Castillo. It was just terrible.
Yeah, I'm shocked he went that cheap, because especially when I'm looking at, you know, Samardzija went for 19. Nola, who I'm a big fan of, went 24.
I had Nola 22 to 24, and it was really late in the draft when he came up. He got pushed a ton. I almost forgot he was on the board, and I just didn't have the money to spend on him. I think I already bought John Gray and bought Waka at that point, and I was like, I can't spend 24, and I was pissed because I love Nola too. He's another guy that I liked. So
here's a starting pitcher I don't understand, and I like his stuff. I just think there's going to be a roller coaster this year, and that could totally be me. I'm not a pitching expert by any means. Not on your team. I'm talking about the starting, but Luke Weaver went for $18. That one, out of, like, you know, you have Godley at 18, Castillo at 18, who you mentioned, Quintana at 18. That must have been late or something, because 18 seems a little steep for me. When John Gray at 16, I'd rather have Gray at 16 than Weaver at 18.
Yeah, I understand that, and I actually, that's great because you're complimenting my team there. But the funniest thing, I think that what you see in a lot of auction drafts is that the values correlate with ADP pretty well, and prior, it just seems like that was a reflection of old ADP, because I know Castillo and Weaver were similar, like, in December, but I know that Castillo has jumped ahead now ADP wise, and Weaver's probably fallen a little bit. But yeah, that's, I mean, if you're telling me Weaver or Castillo, I bet 80% of the industry takes Castillo. So that is then the question as to why they were the same value in this draft. But I'll tell you right now, a lot of funky things happen in auctions. And I don't know I don't remember particularly if I bid on him. I might have went up to like 14 on him, and then someone just went up to 16. I probably didn't have any money. But yeah, that is a weird one, especially when you comp it to Castillo. So yeah, it's tough.
I like the Ziegler because he's a closer at the moment. I'm guessing this is a saves hold league.
It's just saves, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't like that Ziegler value. It's tough, but my strategy. So I know it's tough. The thing was, I punted saves last year. I was last in saves and I won the league. So I think I was just jaded and going with that. But so the other biggest regret I have is not paying 22 or 23 for Kenley Jansen, because
that's cheap. Yeah,
I know. And it was the other thing, again, I built my team and I had Jansen in there at 23. And then I think I ended up spending another bunch of money on someone, probably I spent our 18 on our CS too much. I don't know why I did that, but yeah, 22 for Jansen is like, why didn't I go with that? Like, you could combo Strasburg Jansen, give me another shitty middle infielder, go away from Orlando Arcia at $18 that I spent. It's tough. It's tough. It's tough. There's a lot of regret, but I'm sticking to my guns.
Like we talked about before the show even started, it's 4.5 to 5 hours long.
It's really tough.
It wears on you. It's grinding. It can be like water torture at times. I love it,
but it's tough, man. It's tough.
Yes, it is a grind and a half. One your last pitcher, there are a couple more pitchers, but I really like the dollar for Yoichi Hirano.
Yeah.
Because I think he's got late inning potential there in Arizona. And the other guy I want to mention, you got him for a $0 bid. I love that Michael Lorenzen call. That's a guy I've looked at really, really, really deep leagues late. He's coming back, and I think that could be very interesting.
I love Lorenzen a lot. I actually ended up with Lorenzen on a ton of random teams that I've drafted. I got him in a dynasty league I'm drafting right now really late. I think that aside from the fact that he's just a good pitcher overall, and he actually looked really, really good in his first spring outing, he's got a really good chance to slot in and get some saves if Iglesias gets hurt. And we've had some injuries with Iglesias in the past. Like, he's the clear frontrunner to pull that job. He's the setup man. He's the eighth guy in that inning, in that pen. I think he could clearly jump up and get some saves if he needs it. But I'd be interested if they want to stretch him out a little bit. I just think he's a good ratios guy. Like, he's another guy I'm just going to plug in on off days when I just want some ratio help. Excuse me. Because that's how I tend to kind of help out in leagues like this. Like, my strategy and stuff like this is generally just to go with like two or three starting pitchers I'm confident in, and then kind of just go relievers, try to grab relievers and plug those and get some Ks and innings that way. So I'll probably be starting Strasburg every time out. I'll be starting John Gray every time out. Gohar I might be on and off with, and Walk I might be on and off with. But I mean, Jimmy Nelson, again, that goes to IRI, get the roster spot and hope he comes back and does what he did. So
yeah, a lot of strategy being played there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of your bats. Like I said, we won't go over every player you have, but the Josh Bell for 19 could be sneaky nice, kind of a middle-priced first baseman there. I want to know, you had Ozzy Albies at 22. I love the kid. Talk about helium. He has it this year. I think Brian Anderson at $7 could be very, very good return, everyday third baseman there. Can't hate Chris Bryant at all. Ozuna, Domingo Santana, I like. Orlando Arcia at $18. You already hinted on it.
Yeah.
Ooh, just kind of heat of the moment. Kind of happen?
I really don't know. I like Arcia a bit.
I like him a lot too. But I was like,
he was. I really don't know what. The funniest thing is, like, we were talking about like general drafting strategy. If you look at almost any single one of my teams, I never have any middle infield depth. And for some reason, I looked like after I made about 20 picks in this draft, and I was like, wow, my middle infield is like actually kind of good.
Yeah, your middle infield is very good. It's strong.
I have depth with it too. Like, Defoe is a guy I had on my team last year, and I know I want it again. He's just going to slot in there like whenever someone's hurt on the Nationals and get some at-bats. He's not a terrible player. And I paid too much for RCA. Absolutely. I'll wear that badge.
I'm not going to actually say that. Now, the more I look at shortstop, because I remember hearing
it's weak.
Because Trey Turner went through the roof, stolen bases. I get that.
He was like $50 in this draft.
Yep, $49. I think he's the highest priced guy. Bananas.
Oh, yeah.
but then you got Corey Seager, Paul DeJong, Trevor Story went for $21. I'd rather have an $18 Arcia, personally. I'd rather have an $18 Arcia than a $24 DeJong, because I like DeJong. I just don't know if he's going to give you $24. Yeah. And after Arcia, you got a Amed Rosario at 15, Addison Russell at 15, maybe Chris Owings at 12 now that you see the trade. But when you look at that, I can't really hate on $18 for Arcia. I'm not even trying to kiss your rear end because you're on this pod. I'm just saying, like, when you look at – and that's what we talk about all the time on, you know, getting draft strategy, this, that, the other. A lot of it has to do with how the draft's going. Things dictate things that you might not have planned for, and you have to adjust on the fly. And that could be one of them right there.
I think so. I think you're spot on with that. I mean, that's the thing too. Like, the bats were just generally more expensive in this draft too. Like, Bell at 19, I actually like that value. I think you were.
I like that a lot.
Easily more than that. I think he's just a solid all around hitter. And the thing too, I realized as I was making this team going through is how it was shaping out was like, I don't really have anyone on this team that's going to slaughter me in average. And I think that for some reason I started boosting guys who were like 270, 65-ish hitters because of that. So like Albies, I think it's hit 270. I think Bell could get up to 280. Barnes could be 280. Brian Anderson could probably be 270 with some pop. Flores is a high average guy. Arcia is hopefully a high average guy. Ozuna's a high average guy. Santana obviously drops down a little bit. But like Tapia, I liked as kind of a later pick there for $8. I think he could slot in. He's going to get some bags. He's going to hit really well. And I kind of realized at the end of this draft that like my team is okay on average too. So I hope I'm a front runner in that category, which is not something a lot of people plan for, but it kind of just fell into my lap. And I think that kind of pushed Arcia forward. But I mean, you're looking at the steamer for projections for Arcia right now. They're saying 140 games, 14-14 with 262. So it's a little tough on that 262 there. I'm hoping he can get to the 270, 280 he was last year. I think they're assuming that his speed maybe doesn't play up on the game side as much. He doesn't have too much of an ISO, but he could take a walk. Like, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I kind of want to talk myself into it. I still think it's an overpay, but I mean, you're looking at like 21 on Story. Like, That's all power. I already had some power in Azuna Bryan. I didn't really want any more power. Like, I don't need four
more story,
Bellingers.
If Story could be that guy you have to pay a bunch for that could burn you like last year, there's no one would be shocked if he had another dud.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Brendan Rodgers is almost ready. Like, he could play short. I don't think – I've seen him a couple times out in Hartford, Connecticut.
He's legit.
Their double-A teams there. He's legit, but I don't think he's a shortstop legit, actually, from what I saw in his mannerisms.
True.
I think he ends up slotting in at second base when LeMahieu leaves. But if they want to try him out at short, if Story sucks, like, fine, go for it. He's gonna be fine. You know, there's going to be nothing wrong with him going there. So, I don't know. I'm trying to jump to Story's projections quick to see if I can get him, but my computer's being slow. But
I'll check him out.
I guess we just convinced ourselves that RC wasn't a terrible pick, even though I deep down kind of know it is.
I think a lot of it has to do with situation. That's where I'm going with that, because he's going to be good. He's a 15-15 type guy in a long league. That's valuable, especially a short stop.
It is. The non-steroid bases, too, are huge because it's Billy Hamilton, it's Trey Turner, and then what? Starling Marte? Like,
yes.
I don't want to pay 30 for Starling Marte when I think that I'm probably a little lower on than the industry on him. So I don't know. I don't mind it. 14. If he can give me 15-15 and get to 270, I'll be happy. But I think if he falls to like the 255, I get a little bit worried.
Yeah, Steamer has Trevor Story at about 252 average, 25 homers, 80 RBIs, 69 runs, 9 stolen bases.
That's pretty good.
So,
that's an aggressive projection. Yeah, I'd probably go a little lower on the average. And I mean, Coors, I can't go away from that home run total. So
yeah, you can't hate on that. Out of all the teams that participated, we don't have to go over each one of them. Are there one or two teams that really stood out to you that you're like, dang, they did really good?
Oh, Razzball. Gray did an unbelievable job with his team. And it was funny because we were like messaging back and forth a little bit, and he's in the chat. He's a hilarious guy. If anyone ever interacts with him, this guy's an absolute he's so funny. I just love everything about him. But his team was just kind of one of those teams that I looked later and he paid up on a couple guys that I also liked. And this was more just correlation of value. So like, I liked some of his guys, but he ended up with like a $3 Yasmani Tomas, which after he went off the board for only $3, I immediately typed in like the group chat. I was just like, did anyone else like want to bid on him? Because that is just insane value. Like, I don't understand. I think it was just one of those misbids where no one bid. But $3 on Yasmani Tomas helped out his ratios everywhere else. I'm trying to plug the rest of his lineup. I'm trying to go to his team right now and try to read it off quick. But it's just a lot of guys I like.
He's got a really solid team looking at it right now.
And the thing was
Tommy Joseph for $1, Azuyahe for for nothing. Damn.
It's that's the thing. Like, you get a couple guys like that on the team, and it looks really good. So like, what do you get? Austin Hedges for $6. I heard he made a swing adjustment. I love that. Paid up on Myers, went with Coors bats. He went Desmond Story middle infield. I think there's a smart strategy there by him of going targeting those guys. But like Minerva Sierra at $1 is an absolute steal, because if Brinson isn't what we think Brinson is, he's a starting outfielder. He's gonna steal.
His team's really good.
It's really good. Other really good value here is Acuna at 19. He was one of the first names off the board, and this was the opposite of me being money shy. I was being reserved, and I just didn't want to bid on him for some reason. I was just like, too early in the draft. I don't want to bid. And then he went for 19. I was expecting him to go like 25 with the helium he's getting, but this is a good team. This is a very, very good team. If I had to buy stock in a team, it's this team. I think this team wins.
I love what he did with this pitching, because he put a lot of money into his offense, which it worked, because he got Darvish at 25, Felipe Rivera at 19, Corbin at 10, and then a $3 Vince Velasquez, $3 Sean Newcomb, $3 Jason Vargas, $2 Walker Buehler, who I love, $2 Chris Stratton, who I think could be pretty decent, especially for $2, $2 Jarek Eichhoff, I like. You know, you never know, Scott Kavner, Tyson Roth, Mike Montgomery for nothing. That's sneaky.
It's a really good team. It's scary good, honestly. Like,
yeah, looking at that.
Ralph, excuse me. I'm thinking of the podcast partner I have. Gray's won this league, I think, 3 of the last 4 years, and I knocked him off last year. And I would not be shocked if he wins it this year, and I hopefully knock him off next year.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid deal there.
It's a scary, scary team. It's a scary
team. We already mentioned Trey Turner went for way too much money. Are there like one or two other guys that went for too much in your opinion?
Let me jump to the values quick. I mentioned I was a little low on Marte. I think he went high 20s. I'd probably punt that. Trey Turner at 49. It's tough. 49 is a lot of money. I know it's a middle infielder, et cetera.
Well, let's refresh everybody real quick. What's your budget you start with?
You start with 260, and a lot of these values might look very, very weird on some of the lower level guys, but this is because it's NL only. So like, Josh Bell's going to go for $19 in an NL only. Like, that's just his standard price. I actually think that's fair value for him, really. But in a mixed league, he's going to fall. He's going to be like a $10 guy because it's just like the top end talent resembles similarly what the general dollar value is for general auction. But the lower end talent, like, you're not going to spend $19 on someone like Wilson Contreras probably in a mixed. He's probably going to go for $15. Like Cesar Hernandez at 18 and now only he's going to go for like 10 in a mix. So there's a lot of guys like that, but I'm trying to think, I'm trying to remember back to the draft that there was any names that I was like, how is he still going in value? Keeps going up and up and up. But no one's really jumping out to me right now. I think there was a lot of good picks. Like a lot of the values are right around where I expect them to be. And that's the biggest thing for me.
What about Charlie Blackman going for $2 more than Bryce Harper?
Yeah, Blackman's a good one. I don't think he should have gone for that much. I think a lot of people are smelling some regression with him, and I probably fall in the line with that. I wouldn't be shocked if you're looking at a first-round pick that isn't going to return first-round value, it's Blackman for me, unfortunately. I don't mean to knock the Giants here, but Buster Posey for 24.
I thought that too when I saw it. You can knock it all you want. I agree.
What are you going to – like, he's a really good player. He's invaluable to that team, but on the fantasy side of things, like, Buster Posey's a guy I will never own based on where he's going. And I'm always dumbfounded when he goes like top 70 in drafts. Like, so I heard someone in the industry rank like him above Gary Sanchez. And I just was like, what?
Ooh.
Why? Like, what is Posey going to do that produces more value than Sanchez? Like
nothing.
$24. I don't think if that person offered me anyone on my team below like $24, I don't even know if I'd take Posey. Like, honestly, like I got Barnes at 11. I'm completely content with that. Yeah. Obviously I'd swap Barnes for Posey just because of the playing time, but like Posey for Arcia, like let me hold Arcia. Like $5 more, I got Marcell Ozuna, who's gonna hit 30 home runs and bat 270 in a decent lineup. It's change the scenery for him. Like that's rough value for me. 24 for a catcher is just tough. It's tough.
Last question I have here for the auction draft. Is there a way for people like myself or listeners that might be curious to kind of track how your guys' season's going, or is this kind of just between you guys and we'll find out when it's all done?
I mean, I'll be tweeting about it a bit. I'll try to do some write-ups on it. I really don't know. I don't know. This is one of the – there's like four or five CBS leagues that are probably held a little bit higher in terms of what they track. But I don't know if they track it. I mean, anyone that wants to reach out to me on Twitter, I'll snapshot you like a leaderboard of the standings at any time. I don't mind doing that. I could screenshot on my phone and shoot out a tweet. So I'm at Lance Brosdow if you want to do that, or even email me and I'll send you one. I don't care. But I really don't know. I don't know if anyone tracks these. I wish that there was probably like an aggregated source. That's a good idea. Come up with a big one, like labor, all the CBS leagues, some of the bigger expert leagues. That'd be cool.
Because I even want to see, like, okay, some guy got added or dropped or this thing. Like, I want to see what's going on. What's the mindset? Stuff like that. And I know a lot of other people do. I know Walter McMichael from The Real Fake Baseball was talking about it the other day, trying to figure it out. I think it's really complicated, but I think if everybody got involved, it could be done. It'd be really cool. I think it'd be a great source for that. Could give all of us different content to talk about really easily.
I was about to say, the content would be huge. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's talk prospects, because if you guys missed the first 5 minutes of the podcast, I mentioned he writes for CBS Scouting Net and does a lot of work there. Plus, he has a very, very good podcast with Prospect Jesus, the Razzball Dynasty podcast. I might have messed up the name there, but that's the gist. So you are big on the prospect game. What are some of the ones you're watching in this spring that you're kind of to determine, are they going to make it? Are they not? Cause, you know, everyone, Ohtani, Acuna, those are all their Victor Robles, so on and so forth. What are the ones you're really focusing on?
I'd say for spring reasons, I tend to focus on the bigger guys because I proximity-wise, they tend to be a little bit closer. I'm talking guys like Acuna and Ohtani, et cetera. They're going to make impacts very soon. So I like getting a gauge of them against spring pitchers who I know are generally back-end guys some of the time, but also, I mean, you're going to get the Scherzers. You're going to get some of these other guys that are legit major league pitchers. And I like seeing how those guys play up. So I'd say for spring purposes, if I'm target watching, like if I'm actually going to a game to watch a specific guy, I'm watching one of the top-end talents. So like Fernando Tatis Jr. had a home run, then he went 0-for-3 the next day with 3 Ks. Like that's a guy I'm going to target and probably try to watch his at-bat to see how he looks. And Ohtani, I obviously watched that start. Didn't look too good, but I still think he's an unbelievable pitcher overall. Acuna, same thing, hasn't looked great, but he's still an unbelievable player. So, I mean, you can't kind of punt these guys too quick, obviously, which is something I know a lot of people understand. But, yeah, I think that as far as spring watching goes, I actually like kind of more just sitting back watching games and specifically watching guys and then having other guys pop up. Paul DeJong actually was a guy last year who I saw in spring. I obviously watch a lot of Cardinals baseball and spring training, et cetera. And he looked really, really good in spring. And I remember, I think Dynasty Guru or something like that. I was in one of the Dynasty leagues that kind of folded, but they had to submit like top under the radar guys that could blow up. And I put Paul DeJong there because I watched him a lot and he looked really, really good. He had really good bat speed and no one was talking about him. And it was just a matter of time for him to come up and he blew. I didn't think he'd be this good, obviously, but I really liked what he was doing. So it's guys like that where I'd love to answer this question in 3 weeks when I have like
true.
A couple games under my belt. But I mean, to start, I generally just watch the top end guys, unfortunately.
All right. And one thing I want to let listeners know is if you watch the MLB Network, which most people do, every night or even during the day, but at night on the bottom line, after they give all the game scores, they literally have a prospect link or they do every team's prospects, how they did that game. Awesome. That's pretty fun to watch. I enjoy that quite a bit. It's like the one time I put my phone down, I think, where I watch TV these days. So it comes in handy there. So I'll skip over the kind of off the radar ones you're mentioning. Cause you know, maybe I'll hit you up in a few weeks. We can talk about that one because like you said, we don't know yet. Everyone's out there with the number 94 and playing. So who knows what's going on. Let's talk about some mock drafts. Cause I know you've done some prospect mocks with, the Wells from In This League, great guys over there. And you've done many others most likely. Let's just kind of have a little discussion here. What are some of the ones that have, either for the good or the bad, ADP-wise, some players that are surprising you that it's definitely got your attention?
It's tough. I'd say a couple that come to mind immediately just looking at ADP and kind of where they've gone in mocks are guys like who fit that kind of contact-ish profile, like Whit Merrifield, who's going a little bit aggressive for my liking right now. It's those guys where I don't see a discernible skill. Merrifield's 73 overall if you filter for basically 2018 on NFBC ADP. It's just tough. Like, what are you getting back with him on the prospect side? Excuse me, I'm thinking prospects. On the fantasy side of things that returns that value. I know he's right around there last year, but that's not a good team. The skills are good, but they're more contact profile. He's not going to get a lot of RBIs and runs, so it turns to like he's got to hit like 310. 300 for him to be like really good to produce above this value. And these are kind of guys that I punted in the past and I've gotten burned on. I got burned on Jose Ramirez last year. I wasn't high on him at all and he blew up and I'll wear that badge as well. I was fine, but I tend to kind of stay away from these guys who are a little bit more contact oriented, who are going in this interesting tier where I'm not like Xander Bogaerts 82 overall. That's probably a little more interesting just because he might be devalued because people don't like him too much. But even like a Chris Taylor is a guy who I think the ceiling is more like on 23 home runs. I really don't think he could get over that, you know? And that's a little bit more of like, again, a contact approach where you're kind of just buying the average and hoping everything else comes. Elvis Andrews, I think a lot of people.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him.
Yeah. He's a guy that just you're kind of expecting again what they had last year. And in this window here, I want guys that with discernible tools. I want, you know, give me like a Jacob deGrom who is a discernible pitcher. He's really, really good. Even like Josh Donaldson, I'm fine with. Like, give me Josh Donaldson. 28 overall is probably a little bit aggressive for me, but just the contact-oriented guys with speed is something that I think most of the time I could find later in drafts. Therefore, I don't value it too much in the top 10 rounds. And that's kind of like why I don't like the guys like even like D. Gordon, 28 overall. That's too aggressive for me. I'm not going to own a share of him, unfortunately.
I'd honestly rather have Billy Hamilton than D. Gordon if I had to pick one of them at 28, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah. I mean, the average is a huge differential, but I don't know. Like, he's moving to center field. I'm interested to see how he does with that. And on the steal side of things, I don't know how much the Mariners run overall. I don't know how much you're going to be sending him. He's probably going to steal 40 bags, but I'd rather kind of wait 3 rounds, 4 rounds, and give me a shot at 70 bags, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's just my thoughts.
And you mentioned a guy like Chris Taylor. I'm having such a hard time buying into him. Now, certain times in a mock draft, he fits the mold, I guess. But I agree with everything you said. He's kind of one of those for me where I'm just like, there's a lot of people really high on him, and I just can't see it. You mentioned Jose Ramirez, who great year last year. I was off on him. Most of us were off on him. If people say they were on him, I hesitate believing that almost. But they were on him. Now he's going like 19th overall. Are you on him at 19? Because I am having trouble pulling that trigger.
I don't think I'm going to own him much spots, especially with Lindor two spots later. I think that far as like the general kind of player, like if you're paying, like I'll just flip, like I'm doing my ranks right now. I was actually just looking, as I mentioned, I definitely have Ramirez lower and Lindor higher. I think I have Lindor inside the top 18, and I think I have Ramirez outside the top 25. So like, I mean, most of the time in drafts, you're going to see that these ADPs are falling right in line with where guys are going. So I'm just never going to own Ramirez, and I'm probably going to own some shares. The combo that I actually love doing, and I've done this, I think, in three mocks already, is Bryce Harper and Francisco Lindor. That's combo outstanding. It's a combo I end up getting almost everywhere. If you get like that back end, like a lot of people like top end picks, they want to kind of make their bid on a guy like Trout or Altuve or Turner. Like, I'm fine with that. Give me the one pick, give me Trout. But if I don't get one, I want like 6 through 10. Because I really like Chris Bryant is a guy who I'm going to rank probably top 8. Well, I know a lot of people don't have him top 8, but I'm buying in on what he did last year and him going the other way. I think I'm completely fine with expecting 35 plus home runs from him, to high 280s average. Like, he's going to return a ton of value. He's going 15 overall. I love that. Like, if I'm building a team and I could get Harper to fall to 8 and then on the back end turn around Chris Bryant, like, I don't know how I would be happier with a team, honestly. Like, that's
no, he's that guy. I've been in discussions with people, and you're high on him, so I'm pretty sure you'll agree with this. He's the guy that would not shock you if he's outside of Trout and Altuve, or just Trout at the end of the season. Yeah. When it comes to, he has that talent level, and people are saying he was off last year, but yeah, because you're getting a huge discount. And you mentioned Josh Donaldson earlier. I like that pick because once he came back last year, he played really well. He's a sleeper AL home run champion in the making as well.
Sure, I agree.
I like a lot what you have with him.
He's got to stay healthy, but his swing's always been fantastic. If you get that bat speed back, he does some really good MLB Network breakdowns. I don't know if you ever saw any of those where he talks about
Donaldson's swing. Amazing.
I love him. I love him so much. But the thing he often mentions in that is like it's all in his lower body and his hips, and then he just throws
and
his
hands. It's all beat up.
But yeah, that's all beat up, but his hands, like if his hands slow down and he gets his bat speed down, he's going to have a lot of trouble. But I have confidence he's going to be bounce back into like top 50 value this year. And I don't mind paying up a little just because you got to pay for some ceiling on top guys like this. So I like Donaldson.
We could do a couple quick hitters here.
Sure.
Going 95th overall in the last, since the beginning of 18, Miguel Cabrera. What are you doing with Miggy?
Baby.
Literally one of the best hitters of all time. And he has fallen off the map.
Yeah, actually, I did another Razzball column on him, actually, very briefly. But that was more of just kind of a fun look. But 95 is gorgeous. I'll take him 70 to 50 overall. Easily. And I mean, he back problems, blah, 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 blah. The thing I tend to kind of bucket a lot of these guys who end up with injuries into, was this guy an absolutely elite player at any point in their life? Yes or no?
One of the best ever.
He was one of the best hitters of all time. He's immediate first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, I know back issues are terrible, whatever, whatever, but like, I'm more worried about a back issue in a guy like Ryan Zimmerman, who was never elite, you know, than I am in a guy who, I mean, you could tell he's trying to get into shape. He had some weird off the field stuff happen that I don't really care about, but obviously can affect someone mentally if you want to bring in that side. But I mean, like, he's another guy too. Like, if you look at his baseline stats of what they're projecting him to do off of Steamer. So you can't take last year's value because he was terrible last year. But if you look at what Steamer's projecting him to, which is a balance between what he did 2 years ago when he was a top 20 player and what he did last year, which is, it's a balance between the two. He's aging, whatever. I'm fine with that. It's probably in the 75 to 80 window, which again is 15 above what you're expecting, what your ADP is. And that these are the guys that if you could scoop them up, like even a little bit early, if you ever want to jump in on a guy, just look at ADP versus projections and just stare at those and see what the misvalues are on far as ADP. And those are the guys I'm completely confident in jumping up. If you're looking like these are guys, like if you're, when you get into like the 6th, 7th round, 8th round, you're looking at guys who could fall into that top 40 value. And two guys for me that I think can do that. And I'm talking like, I mean, you can top 40, top 60. So like they're going in that back end, like 9th, 10th round, Miggy and Joey Gallo are two guys that I'm almost relatively confident can produce top 50 value this year and are not being drafted as so.
Yeah, I love Miggy. Like, I've had people just even in mock drafts when I've got him like the 10th round. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's Miguel Cabrera, guys.
Yeah, it's funny because you hear that and you also hear like, oh, great pick on Miggy, good value. And I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, like because he's going 100 overall. And he's better hitter than anyone on the board. Like,
and that's the biggest take home from this. And this is why I wanted to ask you is, like you said, projections 290, 24 homers, 72 runs, 80 yeah. RBIs. You're not picking him 10th overall. You're picking him 100th overall. That is outstanding. Like, yeah. That is great.
You mean the risk is, I mean, he's down on ADP because of the injuries. And that's what you're, if you're terrified of the back, sure, you're never going to pay his value for him because he's never going to play. But if you have any semblance or you have any idea that he's going to produce a decent value and his back's going to be moderately okay. I think what I said in the Razzball piece was like, give me Miggy for half a year. If he's healthy, I'm confident he could be healthy for half a year. And then after that, you know, let me trade him on the cheap. I'll pay down if anyone thinks like that he's or at 80 games and he's going to run down and not turn the value that he's expecting. Like, fine, I'll take a loss on Miggy if I could get that first half of good Miggy. And I can think that really, really puts you ahead in fantasy leagues if you get Miggy and have him produce. Because, I mean, you're going to know very, very quickly if Miggy's on or not at the beginning of the year. And at that point, when that happens, like his value is either going to go way up or it's going to go completely to the floor. And what his price is right now, I'm 100% happy with taking a bet on that. It goes up and you return substantially more than you're paying.
Exactly. The last little kind of make this a debate between two players, yeah. second base position, going about 101st overall. You got Javi Baez who, to me, is very polarizing because you just don't know what you're going to get with him. Entertaining to watch, great stuff, a lot of things you're going to like about him. But, you know, you look at projections, 262, 22, 60, 72, and 10 ribbies are just on bases. And then you got Rougned Odor going 106, coming off that year where he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn if he tried. He could hit the ball a mile when he actually connected with it, but it was a mess. He did hit 30 homers, but hitting 204. They do have him projected for 29 homers, a 256 average, which is much, much better, and 13 stolen bases. If you had to pick just one, which one do you trust? Which one are you taking?
I'll go Rougned Odor here. This is a guy that Gray on Razzball was like really, really high on last year. They had him like top like 50, I think. And if you were in any of the Razzball RCLs, which are kind of like these commenter leagues they run, he was like, the funniest thing with those leagues is that they all draft off Gray's rankings. So like the guys that are consensus good on Razzball, you have to pay Razzball value for. Whereas if you apply Razzball value to other leagues, you're like, oh my God, like this guy's fallen 50 picks from where Razzball has him. And I think that's so funny, but yeah, give me Rougned there. I think they're around the same age, but I think people kind of misperceive how young Rougned Odor is, but I think that you kind of just have a little bit more instability of playing time there. Last year was a really weird year for him. I know he doesn't walk at all. He almost falls into that kind of like Jonathan Scope category where he just doesn't really walk at all. He's got a bit of swing and miss, but his bat to ball is a little better, I think, than people realize, even though he posts like 25, 26, 7% strikeout rates. I think I don't mind him. Like his bat to ball is good enough to the point where he's swinging away a ton. Like I know he's going to steal a couple bags. He's non-zero there for me. And like they're projecting him for what on home runs on Rougned Odor? Like they
got to be
29.
Wow.
See, that is another one. Like average out all that. What are they giving? They're giving him, I just jumped here, 256 average. Average out all that and place it against his ADP. He's returning immediately if he hits his projection. And that's another guy. Like I love that value. I love that value. Honestly, he's 101 right now. Yeah, take him 80. That's again, second base is relatively weak too. That's a beautiful, beautiful piece of value there.
And if you get Altuve early or you somebody with average, in case he hiccups, you still get the power and you have a middle infielder and watch out. So I like it a lot, and that's why I kind of wanted to have all these discussions tonight because it wasn't just breaking down players. There's a lot of draft strategy and a lot of things going into the season because it's almost March 1st. It's about go time. The Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational is about to go down, my friend. What league number are you in?
I'm in five, I think. I was just talking about this with someone. And the picks are out already too, right? I think. I saw if you jump into the draft room, I think it ranks everyone. Do you know if that's being like reset or – I'm not too sure.
No. If it, I'm number two. They're legit. It's go time. Sweet.
Awesome. So I got 10. I'm probably going – if Harper falls to me, I am going Harper. But if not, I will go Chris Bryant. Anyone in my leads listening, you already know my pick. So don't
– Yeah. Them, please. Yeah, so anybody knows, I'll take Jose Altuve for the guy, unless some idiot doesn't take Mike Trout. I forgot who's number one in my league, so I apologize for calling you an idiot, but if you do, you're an idiot. So let's just be honest about it.
Yeah. Okay.
But everybody, go check out Lance's work. He's on Twitter at Lance Brozdow, Brozdow. Big Three Sports does a ton there. Razzball, as you mentioned, podcast, writing, lots of great stuff there. And honestly, he's talked about the guys at Razzball. They do phenomenal stuff. Rudy, absolutely. He's in a bunch of leagues. Like, he's not just saying it because he works for them. They do amazing stuff there. Like, really, really good stuff.
Really good work, yep.
So check out Razzball. CBS Scouting, tons of great stuff there. Lance, always a pleasure, my friend. Great stuff, as always.
Thanks for having me. Everyone enjoy your drafting season as it comes forward.
Yeah, we'll definitely do this again soon, my friend. Bench with Bubba, episode 75 in the books. Catch you guys next time.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.